accession number 18493, reel 6.
Arnold Lupton, reel 6. About the about readiness for war, how aware were you of as a trooper at this time about whether or not you were actually ready to go to war?
Well, I don't. We were ready only in that we were directed that we were going to war, but as for driving tanks around without any immediate support, or firing from tanks at some other tanks or whatever, we weren't ready at all. We just were there, and that was it. Go there and do what you can, sort of thing. You had to learn it as you went along. That's all we could do.
About the... were you aware at the time that your unit might be significantly deficient in its war establishment?
Not really. We didn't know. In fact, I don't think anybody really knew properly what we were going up against. And, of course, the French had their Maginot Line and all this kind of stuff to stop the Germans. But we... No. We didn't know what we were going against. Somebody may have done way up in the top. We were fortunate that at that time, in fact, the Germans didn't have any very high quality armour or armoured machinery. We couldn't completely meet them on an equal footing, but we were nearly equal in some ways. Not with these light tanks that were, or the other people who had the infantry tanks, which could go about 4 miles an hour flat out. They could stand up to anything the Germans could fire at them at that time, but they weren't really any use except to carry infantry with the others marching alongside, more or less. We had our feeble light tanks and so on, a lot of them. And providing you didn't get face on to them, to the Germans, generally you were okay, unless you met one of the ones which had a 75 millimeter gun on it. But in general, we weren't too far behind them. There just weren't enough of us.
About training, going back to training then, had you done any troop or squadron exercises or even unit exercises since you had joined the regiment?
Not. There had been a bit of country running and movement in the area around Ringwood. Is that Dorset? Yeah, somewhere around there. There was a bit of training going on, not firing, of course, just troop training and that kind of thing. But even that wasn't a great amount, because they were trying to make sure that everything was keyed up to go off at a moment or two's notice. Having got down to Ringwood, we were there actually 3 or 4 weeks, I should think, maybe a little longer. Yes, a bit longer than that. But we had to be ready all the time to be called to go across. And so they couldn't let too many of the vehicles out on training and perhaps muck them up a bit.
Your this particular training, did it involve staying on roads, or were you able to do some cross-country training as well?
No, we could do some cross-country training. And even nowadays, you know, around Weymouth and that area, there's quite a bit of country that's still the ordinary person can't walk across. And, well, that was... We weren't firing then, but we were at least moving across that kind of country, which wasn't much use if you were going to a heavily wooded part of France or somewhere. But at least you got some idea of moving groups of tanks around under some central command, even if the central command had to wave a flag to tell you to move because they had no radios.
Do you have any specific recollections of any of this kind of training?
No, just moving around in troops, groups of tanks, and, you know, finding yourself in a good position behind a bit of country where you could, if you were firing, you'd be in a good position to fire, and just the top of your turret and your gun, sort of getting training in positioning people and getting them to do what they should do when they should.
So the concept of finding a hull down position was live and...
Oh yes, yeah. Yes. Yes, which was very good for us later on, not in France, but later on. Well, it did okay in some parts of France too, but more so in the desert later on.
Right, just before we get you actually into France, two things. Whereabouts were you when war itself was declared? Can you recall that, you know, the 3rd of September?
Yes, I was still... I was at Bovington then. It was very shortly after that that we got moved out to Warminster. Only a week or so.
What was the feeling? Yours and your friends?
No. Well, we were there to do it if necessary, and that was the sort of thing that... we hadn't really joined up to go to war, but if we had to go to war, we were there, and we had been trained to some extent to be soldiers, even if not drivers or gunners and properly on tanks. But we were there, so we had to do it. That was all.
Did it come in any way as a surprise, or...?
Not really. It had been really building up for several months before that. The Germans were doing, you know, what they liked without being stopped, and somebody felt they had to stop them, especially when they went into Poland, of course. That really set it off then.
And when the attack into the Low Countries on the 10th of May 1940, when that happened, and by that time you were with and had been with the Royal Tanks, 2nd Royal Tanks, for some time,
about five or six months. Mm. Yes.
Mm. What was the feeling then? I mean, first of all, how did you hear the news?
Just over the radio. It, you know, there wasn't any other communication form. Well, papers, yes, but over the radio. And so we felt that we could be in the thick of it before long, especially as there were so few people who were suitably equipped to go, apart from us, you know, I mean, apart from us and some infantry and so on, gunners.
Did anybody, you know, from the officers, did anybody try and sort of paint the big picture?
It was very rarely that anybody from the officers tried to paint any big picture, or even tell us why we were going or where we were going. These things just seemed to happen, and there we were that moment. Next moment we'd have to be getting on a ship somewhere and going, or loading the tanks on train flats anyway, getting ready to go.
How about the 10th of May attack? I mean, did that one come as a surprise? Because it had been hanging around for a long time and he hadn't done anything.
It came as rather a surprise when it did come, yes. For them to do that took... I think it took everybody by surprise, really. They felt that they'd got a big enough army and their blitzkrieg could get them through, and it did. And I think it took everybody by surprise. Took the French, too, by surprise.
It took some time before your unit actually moved off to France.
Yes.
By the time you did go, you knew pretty well, I think. I think it was fairly clear publicly that things were not going well.
Yes.
How did that affect you? How much did you know, and how much did it affect you as a unit?
Well, we knew that things weren't going well in France. As a unit, we didn't have any chance, really, to ponder it too long. They just sort of got us off and got us into France, and go to it, lads, you know, whatever. That was it.
I was just wondering if there was any sort of feeling that maybe you were joining a losing battle, or did that thought simply not occur?
No, it didn't occur, really. It soon became apparent that it was a losing battle, but it wasn't as we went there or as we arrived there. We didn't necessarily think it was a losing battle. We thought probably we could hold them back. Didn't think we could push them back to way up north or into Germany again, but at least stop them ploughing too far down France. We couldn't, because they had the superiority in the air and on the ground too. Even though they did eventually get too extended in their positions relating to supply, that didn't really occur until they'd got rid of us.
On the training that you were doing within the regiment, how was this done? Was it in formal sessions, or were you sort of learning on the job?
We were... they were really formal sessions, yes. You weren't learning as... you didn't just go out and learn while you were out. You did go out on a special trip to learn to drive, or how to aim your gun and all this kind of thing. When we were moved from the depot, Bovington or Lulworth, there weren't many places in England that you could just go and shoot. So mainly, you never fired any shot. But you did learn how to move the guns, aim them, and all this kind of thing. Driving, you usually had an NCO, either a corporal or sergeant, who had either taught driving before or was fully qualified and able to do so. You might possibly know, we didn't normally go out with an older trooper who was experienced in driving tanks. They just drove them, not taught them. And that was all we had. We just had these courses. Well, they weren't actually courses, they were just odd days. Your turn to come and learn to drive this tank and so on.
Physically, how did your instructor, how did he actually physically do it? Because, for example, on an A9, you can't get in beside the driver, can you? And I don't think you can get in beside the driver even on an A10. So, did he physically do it?
Well, mainly he was outside on the front of the tank. He's either sitting on one of the dustbins or on the level front area of the tank next to the driver and instructing him through the hole what to do, through the driver's hatch, what to do. And if of course it was extremely wet, he might be in the turret and sort of squatted on the floor next to the, well, just behind the driver's shoulder, and instructed him from there, where he could also see through the visor as well as the driver. Nearly as well as the driver, anyway. So that was really the way it was done.
Potentially drafty and wet job.
Yes.
And about the duties on the tank, had every member of the crew at this stage, still talking about still being in the UK and still in peacetime, had everyone got a very specific job, and was that well laid down?
No, more or less you tried to operate in various features in the tank, as not as a driver, I mean that was done separately, but as a gunner, as a radio operator if there was one, or as a loader, and it was more or less a question of seeing which you seemed to be best suited for. Then you were specified as a loader, a gunner, or whatever it was.
I think what I was getting at is, as a crew, for example, at the end of the day, I mean, did you have specific jobs like them, to re-ammunition or to look after the oil and water and, you know, hose the thing down? I mean, those kind of housekeeping jobs.
Yes. You would, when, as I say, more or less when they decided into which operation you were going to be centred, and then you would take over whatever came into that job, like loading up, unloading empty shell cases, or as you say, watering or putting in petrol or whatever into the engine. And then it depended into which line you were put as to what services on the tank you would take over.
You were a gunner at this time, so what were your... Because there weren't many empty shell cases to be removed, so what was your particular role when at the end of the day?
Well, the main thing was to see that the guns were clean, you had the cleaning to do, of each of the guns, which unless you were in one of the bins and had your own machine gun there. But in the turret, you were supposed to look after the cleaning of the two-pounder and of the machine gun. Look after the, make sure all catches were either on or off the mechanism, and then to make sure that you had the ammunition on board which you would need in the event of going into action for any reason, or suppose the paratroops landed or something. You never knew. If you were the loader, then you would make sure that the racks around were fully loaded and loaded with the usable shot, and to make sure that the belts in the machine guns were loaded and had sufficient what do you call them, the ones you could see the back of,
tracer
shot in to supply you with a vision, and also they would be responsible for keeping the turret clean and tidy so that nobody would fall over anything, which did happen in action sometimes.
How about the driver? What were his specific responsibilities?
Well, he not only had to make sure that everything was working properly, steering, brakes, all that kind of thing, but also to make sure that he had petrol, oil, water correctly topped up when it needed to be at the end of the day, ready for the next outing. And the crew generally were sort of responsible for keeping the tank clean, making sure the tracks were tensioned properly and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting about tracks. Did you have problem with tracks on these early cruisers, A9s and 10s?
No. Tracking was generally very well fitted up and maintained in one way or the other. You like you do even in modern engines, you should do anyway, is check the tension of your driving belt and that sort of thing for the fan and the and the charging.
Oh.
You know, make sure that that's all right. Well, in those days you also had to, in addition to checking over the tension of things in the engine and the setting of them and so on, which you learnt as part of your driving courses, then we also had to make sure of the tracks, which you did by just feeling how they were tensioned pulleys.
Did you ever have any breaks? I mean, how difficult was it to change or to repair a track?
It was quite a hefty job, as you might say. Because if, for instance, a track broke, which was probably due to one of the pins holding one bit of track to the next bit snapping, then you had to, or the driver had to, adjust the tank so that the track was laid out nicely along the ground by steering carefully down it or up it, whichever way it had broken, and then you had to knock out any remaining parts of pin, put in a new pin so that you could manually lift it over the support rollers, and up to the other part of the track which was supported on either the front or the rear carrier roller, and then force them together, take out the pin first and force them together by pulling with a enormous sort of clamp thing to get them together and bang the pin through.
Was this a special tool as part of the tank kit, this clamp?
Yes, yes. It was like a... formed more or less like a vice which you have on a workbench, so that you could wind it up and it drew it together into the correct position so that you could get the pin through.
And did you have, is it a standard kit for the tank that you had, say, spare track plates and pins?
Yes, you did. You always had them. You had a few track plates which were clamped onto the side of the turret, or on the side of the body, it depended where. Where there was a mounting. And you had two or three spare pins in the tank too, and the track clamp. They were all standard equipment.
I mean, to be clear, we are talking here about an all-metal track, aren't we? So it would be very heavy.
Yes. Yes. Some of them did. Well, it was later on, really, when they had a bit of rubber in the track. But it was still heavy anyway. Each plate was a fairly heavy piece of metal. And the whole track was a hefty piece of metal, too.
Presumably one of the things that did not have to be thought about when you were still in the UK was producing food. Did you?
No, we had the squadron cook and probably a mess place where we all went to collect the food and eat it. The only thing you had to do was to be... Some of you would peel spuds and some would wash up, but otherwise, no, you didn't have to bother about food then.
So were you messing on a squadron basis?
Yes, well, we were. We seemed to be separate a lot of the time. C squadron, being in the earlier part of the war in Dunstable, and we had the drill hall. We'd taken over the drill hall for accommodation. There was also a certain number of men who were out in private digs, but they normally came along to the drill hall for meetings, for food and that kind of thing. Cookhouse was also at the back of the drill hall.
What was the food like?
Very good, considering. Mind you, at that time, the war, the rationing hadn't really got biting into stocks, but whatever it was, the cooks seemed to be reasonably trained, and they may have been square pegs in round holes, but at least they did quite well with army cooking, with the food that they had to provide us with.
There's enough of it, Mother.
Oh, there's plenty of it, yes. Mm.
What about sleeping arrangements? Where were you? Because you started off in these awful bell tents, I seem to remember, up to your knees
yes.
in mud.
Well, when we were at Dunstable, I was in the drill hall, which was quite comfortable. Well, at least we had blankets on the floor, but you were covered, protected from the weather fully, and was reasonably warm because it was during the winter months we were there, and it was a really appalling winter that. And I say several of the people were also out in private houses, and they were very comfortable and generally had a very good time around Christmas. I didn't, because I had tonsillitis. I couldn't eat a thing. And I was absolutely fed up with everybody being out, me being in bed and sort of supping porridge or something. I don't know what it was.
You didn't get home for the Christmas then?